Well, welcome back. For those of you that are just joining us, I'm Doug Coker. I'm the Education Coordinator for the North Carolina National Estuarine Research Reserve. And today, this session, we're going to talk about reptiles. And we have an educator from the North Carolina Aquarium at Pine Knoll Shores, Jennifer Hoskins.
Hi.
And joining us are students today. Would you guys like to introduce yourselves?
I'm Katie Royce from Brinson Memorial in New Bern.
I'm Andrew Russian from Brinson Memorial in New Bern.
And I'm Lauren Risk from Brinson Memorial in New Bern.
Okay, Jennifer?
All right. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us. As Doug mentioned, I am an educator out at the North Carolina Aquarium here at Pine Knoll Shores. This morning, I am going to talk to you about some reptiles, and I've got three very eager people here with me who actually happen to love reptiles. So we're going to talk a little bit about reptiles, what they are, and we've got some live animals that you guys will get a chance to see this morning. So hopefully these guys can let you know how they feel and stuff like that. So first of all, can you guys, anyone tell me, what does it mean to be a reptile? Let's see. Go ahead. Andrea?
They're cold-blooded.
They're cold-blooded. Yeah, does that mean they're cold all the time?
No, it means that they adjust to the temperature around them.
Oh, excellent. Actually, yeah, cold-blooded, or another word for cold-blooded is ectothermic. And what that means is basically the animal's temperature is about the same as their surroundings. So if you've got maybe an alligator that's out swimming in the water, its body temperature is going to be about the same as that water that it's in. If you've got a snake that might be slithering around on the land, its body temperature will be about the same as the air that's around it. If they get too hot, they might go to a colder area, maybe like into the shade or into the water. If they get too cold, you might see them bask in the sunshine. So that's why a lot of times you'll see turtles basking and stuff like that. What's something else that reptiles have in common? Lauren?
They have no fur or hair.
Okay, so what do they have? If they don't have fur or hair, what do they have on their body?
Scales.
That's right. They have dry, scaly skin. Has anyone here ever thought that a snake was slimy before? Anybody ever thought that? Yeah, a lot of times people think that snakes are slimy, but actually they're not. All reptiles have very dry, scaly skin, and we'll get a chance for these guys to actually feel some of these reptiles and see how they feel. Now, we said that they are ectothermic or cold-blooded. We said that they have dry, scaly skin. There's one other thing that reptiles have in common. Can anyone think of that?
They all lay eggs?
Yeah, for the most part, reptiles lay eggs. Now, the reason I say for the most part, there are some exceptions to that rule, and that's some of our snakes actually have live birth. But generally speaking, we'll say reptiles lay eggs, and their eggs are very different than eggs that most people think of, like chicken eggs. If you think of a chicken egg, they're very hard and crunchy on the outside, whereas reptile eggs tend to be kind of tough and kind of leathery to help protect those little babies while they're developing. Now, we've got examples of some different reptiles that are out here. Can you guys tell me, what are some different reptiles that you can think of? Go ahead, Andrew.
Alligators and crocodiles.
Alligators and crocodiles, yes, absolutely. Those are one good example of some reptiles. What about some others? Lauren?
Snakes and turtles.
Snakes and turtles are another good example. There's one other kind of reptile that I don't have here today. Can anyone think of another reptile?
Iguanas and lizards.
Yes, lizards are another group. And all of those different animals are reptiles. Like I said, I do have some that we're going to see today. I think I'm going to start off with snakes. Anybody here like snakes? Yeah. Anyone here not like snakes? I'm not sure here in the middle. Well, what I've got with me today, in just a minute, I'm going to bring out a live snake. But before I do that, I'm going to talk about snakes a little bit in general. Now, snakes, you can find snakes that are either venomous or non-venomous. Does anyone know what that means?
That they're either poisonous or not poisonous.
Yeah, and basically what that means, it has to do with how they eat. Some snakes, if they're venomous, that means that they have a poison that's in their mouth, and whenever they're looking for their food, and they're carnivores, they like to eat maybe mice or maybe rats. Some of them eat birds, some of them eat frogs, some of them eat other snakes. But venomous snakes, what they'll do is when they find their food, they've got fangs, and they'll bite whatever it is they're going to eat. We're not going to eat you today, don't worry. And that'll basically poison their prey or the food that they're going to eat. And they'll either die or they'll be paralyzed. And then the snake will come along and he opens his mouth really huge and he swallows it whole. It's kind of like if you guys were to try to swallow a basketball whole. Can you imagine doing that? A fully inflated basketball. That would be kind of gross. Yes, Katie?
I know the difference between those two, how they look.
Well, we'll talk about that in just one second. Let me talk about how they eat first. Now, non-venomous, those are ones that don't have that poison. And how they eat, there's a couple different ways. Have you guys heard of constrictors before? Yeah, constrictors, all that means if something constricts is that it squeezes. So what they'll do is they'll wrap their body around whatever it is they're going to eat and they'll squeeze it. They'll squeeze it tight enough to where it can't take any breaths in, so it can't breathe anymore. And then they'll do the same thing and open their mouth, kind of unhinge their jaw, and swallow it whole. Now, Katie, you had said you know how to tell the difference between those two. How can you tell the difference between a venomous and a non-venomous snake?
A venomous snake, its head is more triangular, and a non-venomous snake, it's just pretty much the same size as its body.
That's sometimes true. There's exceptions to those rules, though. Here in North Carolina, we have 37 different species of snakes. Of those 37, 6 are venomous. Of those 6 venomous snakes, 5 are what we call pit vipers. And for pit vipers, Katie, that's true. They do tend to have triangular-shaped heads. Their pupils look kind of like a cat's. It runs up and down. The black part of their eye runs up and down like a little slit. So that is true for pit vipers, but for other venomous snakes, it's not always the case. And the coral snake is an example of that here in North Carolina. Their pupils don't look like that, and their heads are very thin like the rest of their body. So it's not always safe to go by that. Best thing that I like to tell people to do is if you see a snake in the wild, what do you guys think you should do?
Red versus yellow killer fellow.
Well, that's the one for the coral snake, but if you see any old snake, what do you think you should do? Lauren?
Not mess with it or touch it.
That's my advice. If you see a snake, best thing to do, stop what you're doing, take a couple really slow steps away from it, because sudden movements can actually scare a snake and cause it to strike. If a snake gets scared, he can't scream, can he? He can't kick, he can't hit. So if he can't get away, the only thing he knows to do to protect himself might be to bite. So take a couple slow steps away. If you're scared of snakes and you then want to run up to the house or back to the school, that's okay as long as you're careful. And then for all you kids out there, always make sure you let an adult know that you've seen it. Never, ever, ever go up to a snake and try to pick it up, sling it around, or do anything crazy like that, because what do you think might happen?
He might bite you.
He might bite you. I don't blame him if he bit you. So best thing to do is just leave snakes alone. Chances of seeing snakes are probably pretty slim, just because they're pretty scared of us. If you guys think about a snake, small little snake, it sees a big person walking up near it, gets pretty scared, and usually they're going to try to slither away to escape. Now, speaking of slithering, snakes, like I said, they don't have arms, they don't have legs, do they? No. Did you guys know that snakes, even though they don't have arms and legs, they can slither really fast? Have you ever seen one climb a tree? They can climb trees, and guess what? They can even swim. How cool is that? That's pretty neat. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to bring out a snake for you guys to see. Would you guys like to see a live snake?
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, this snake I'm going to bring out is called a corn snake. It's a non-venomous snake. I would never bring a venomous snake out and hold it for people to see. I would certainly never handle a venomous snake. And the venomous snakes that I do work with, we actually use hooks so that we're not in any danger at any time.
Okay, while Jennifer's bringing out the snake, we'd like to say hello to Miss Brooks' class at Aquadale School and the Charlotte Latin School. Glad you guys could join us today. Now, we also encourage anybody out there to go ahead and submit questions, and we'll get to them as soon as we can.
Okay, thank you. All right, now like I said before, this right here is a corn snake. It's a beautiful snake. If you take a look here, you're gonna see it sticking its tongue out at me. You may be able to see that. Do you guys know what's going on when the snake is sticking his tongue out? Need a microphone.
Smelling you.
It's smelling. Snakes actually do use that tongue to smell. What they do is they stick their tongue out and it picks up scent particles in the air. When they bring their tongue back inside their mouth, they have a special organ called a Jacobson's organ that's on the roof of their mouth, and that tells their brain what those scent particles are doing, what's going on out there. That helps them to find their food. Maybe there's a little mouse or something he can smell and he would know which way to go. Do you guys think snakes can hear? What do you guys think? Guys think, yeah? A lot of people think snakes can hear when actually snakes can't hear at all. They do have some of the same bones inside their head that we have in our ears, but they use those bones to help them to pick up on vibrations, which is a really good thing to be able to do when you spend your whole entire life pretty much on your tummy. Now, you guys take a look, and you guys see on top here of what he looks like. These snakes, for the most part, you'd find in areas where there are lots of pine trees. You can see how that might blend in or be camouflaged to the pine straw and also to the bark on a pine tree. But there's something really neat about this guy as well. Can you see the underside? What does that look like? Anybody want to tell Doug what that looks like? Lauren said it.
It looks like a checkerboard.
Yeah, it looks kind of like a checkerboard. Some people say like piano keys or something like that. This is a special camouflage called countershading. Basically, if you guys can imagine, remember I said snakes can climb trees, can climb up in the tree. If he's up in a tree, kind of perching on some branches up there, if you've ever been in a forest and you happen to look up on a nice sunny day like today, it might look like there's a lot of white from the sun coming through and then look really dark where there are branches. That black and white pattern is kind of mimicked right here on his underside. So that's special countershading. Basically, dark on top right here and light on the underside to help him to protect himself. Now what I'm going to do is I'm going to let you guys touch the snake if you want to. I'm going to ask that you please don't touch him near his face. Now remember I said if you see a snake in the wild, please don't pick him up. I'm holding this one because I'm trained to hold this snake. And I work with the snake on a regular basis. If I see a snake out in the wild, I still would never pick it up. So please remember that. I'm going to let these guys touch this snake and tell you guys back on the other side of the computers there just what it feels like. Because I know not everyone's had a chance to touch a snake before.
So this snake is used to being handled by people.
It is used to being handled by people. However, it's not a pet. It's still a wild animal. And I've been asked by these guys earlier, could it bite? And my favorite answer for that is that anything with a mouth certainly could bite. So as long as we don't give it a reason to, hopefully it won't. And I've never been bit by a corn snake before, but that doesn't mean that it couldn't.
I've been bit by a rat snake.
Have you?
Yes, and then it's not fun, but it's not not as bad as a guinea pig.
Yeah. I have been asked before if I've ever been bit by a snake, and the answer is yes, and I don't recommend trying it. I was bit by a California king snake while I was teaching a first grade class. So it turned into a great lesson, and no, it's not a mean snake. He's just doing what snakes do sometimes. So let me go ahead and let everyone have a chance to touch.
Well, while she's showing the students the snake, what we'd like to do is welcome Ms. Campbell's class at Tuttle Middle School and Wrightsville Beach Elementary. Thanks for joining us. So, Katie, what do you think about that snake?
He's soft, sort of.
Oh, okay. Okay, he changed his mind. Oh, I'm going to bring the snake up closer here. You guys can get a close-up look at this corn snake here. This is the top side. And then its underside, so you can see the beautiful countershading there.
That's good.
Okay.
Okay, Jennifer, we have a couple questions coming
right
in. Would you like to entertain those? First one is, how many snakes you think we can find in the estuary?
Wow, that's really hard to say. I don't spend a whole lot of time out here over at Rachel Carson's site, and I know that a lot of people haven't really seen snakes themselves because, remember, they are very secretive animals. A lot of times people know that there's been a snake in the area because they might find some eggs where some snakes have been. They might have seen areas where a snake has maybe slithered around. There are definitely snakes that would live out there, but to try to guess how many there are would be pretty tough. So
I can honestly say, being over there, I've never seen a snake.
Yeah.
I went over there with a herpetologist one day, and we looked for snakes and lizards and never found a snake. But we have had people say they found rat snake skin.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure rat snakes are fairly common in areas just like you would find over in there. So
we also have
over near the aquarium, you do have some in the woods there.
Absolutely, absolutely. Over at the aquarium site where our building is, there's several different snakes you could find out in that area, including corn snakes like this.
How about poisonous snakes? Another question was, what's the most poisonous snake in North Carolina and even in the world?
The most venomous snake that you would find here in North Carolina is probably the diamondback rattlesnake. That's also the largest of the snakes. They usually, on average, are about 5 to 6 feet long. But they can get as long as about 8 feet. Now, as far as in the world, it just escaped me. Which one is the most venomous? We usually concentrate. Do you know right off, Doug?
I remember something about a snake in Central America, somewhere around Costa Rica. It was the black mamba?
Viper.
The mambas are very dangerous. If I'm not mistaken, though, one of the most dangerous is in Australia. But I'm not sure which one that is right now. Yes, the crocodile hunter talks about them all the time.
Maybe a bushmaster.
I believe that is it. Thank you.
Wow. Way to go, Andrew.
We got future herpetologists right here helping me out. So
we also have a small poisonous snake that's fairly rare in eastern North Carolina. a coral snake.
Yes.
Have you ever seen one of those in the wild?
I have never seen one, fortunately. Now, coral snakes, they are extremely very dangerous animals that are found here in North Carolina. They're very rare, though. They are considered to be endangered in North Carolina because there are so few. They can be found down closer to South Carolina in Brunswick County and New Hanover County. I have never seen one. And even though they are found here in North Carolina, their mouths are so small, there are no documented cases of anyone ever being bit by a coral snake. So
we had another couple questions come in, and the first one is, why do younger snakes have more venom?
Actually, that's not necessarily true. That's kind of an old wives' tale, and basically what happens, I think the younger ones are just as potent as the adults, but maybe they kind of get the idea that they have stronger venom just because they are so small and the venom is still potent. So that's not necessarily true with that.
Daniel's Middle would like to know, why is that snake you're holding called a corn snake?
That's a wonderful question. I've heard a couple different theories on that. One theory is that the underside looks kind of like Indian corn or maize, and you see how it's got that black and white checkered pattern. Another reason that I've heard is because they're found a lot of times in cornfields, where there would be a lot of mice and rats, and these guys would love to eat all those little mice that would be out in cornfields. So, do I have another question on snakes?
Looks like
we... Did you guys have another question on snakes before I move forward? I do have down here for you guys to take a look at a shed from actually a corn snake. You guys can feel that. What snakes do when they grow is they'll shed their skin. And when they do that, they basically have grown too big for their old skin. And they'll begin shedding at the top of their head. Basically, they'll start kind of peeling backwards and inside out. So the part that you're touching was actually up next to the snake. The part that was on the outside is on the inside. Kind of like if you were to take your sock off from the top to the bottom and just pull it straight off, it would come off inside out. If you guys take a close look at it, you'll see they even lose the little scales that cover their eyes. They don't have any eyelids, so you can't tell if a snake is sleeping just by looking at it.
Jennifer, we have some more questions coming in. You had mentioned earlier about the eggs and stuff that snakes lay. Well, one of the questions is, how many babies can a snake have?
Oh, that's a great question. It varies a whole lot from snake to snake. Some snakes lay as few as about eight eggs at a time, or have eight live babies. Some of them can have as many as 20, 30, and I think some of the really large snakes that live in other countries can have up to 60, 70, something like that. So it really depends a whole lot on the type of snake.
Now we've talked about the poisonous snakes and maybe the most poisonous in North Carolina and maybe in the world. How about the biggest snake? That was a question that has come in.
There's a lot of controversy on the biggest snake. A lot of people say that the anaconda is one of the largest snakes. I think it depends on whether or not you're looking at the weight of the snake or the length of the snake. There's a python that gets to be longer than the anaconda, but the anaconda is the heaviest.
Speaking about that, how big that snake is, then what's the biggest animal it could eat?
Oh, well, some snakes that get very large can eat animals that are about the size of a goat or maybe a deer. So I wouldn't want to run into that one in the wild.
I don't blame you. I don't think I would either.
Yeah, Doug, in Okefenokee Swamp down in Georgia and Florida, I once saw a rattlesnake that would reach from about you to me.
That's a pretty big poisonous snake.
It was a very large rattlesnake.
Yes.
It was the biggest live rattlesnake I've ever seen.
Well, folks, I think now we're going to switch gears from talking about snakes to Jennifer.
Let's talk a little bit about turtles. I'm going to save my alligator for last. Turtles here in this area right here in estuary areas, you can find some really interesting turtles. One of the favorites in this area, though, is the diamondback terrapin. Diamondback terrapin is a really unique turtle in that it's found in brackish areas. Do you guys know what brackish means, Lauren?
Salt water and fresh water mixed together.
That's exactly right. Brackish water is just where that salt water and the fresh water have mixed. So they live in an area identical to right here where we're standing right now. Now, these turtles are considered to be a species of special concern for many reasons. Do you guys know what it means that an animal is a species of special concern? Have you ever heard that before? Do you know, Andrew?
Like it's endangered?
It's not quite endangered, but it's kind of like that. That means they're protected by law. There's not so few that they're considered to be endangered. They're not quite threatened yet, but they're just a little bit away from that. There are special laws to protect these guys, and this is what they look like right here. I do have a live one we'll bring out in a minute. Several things have happened to them. Back in the 1800s, these guys were very popular for food. They were used in a lot of soups and stuff, and they were considered to be a delicacy. So people would come down to this area, and they would take these animals from the wild. One thing about reptiles that I didn't mention is it takes a long time before they reach maturity. So if they were to come take a little turtle like this, who is maybe 4 or 5 years old, there's a good chance it hasn't had a chance to lay any eggs yet. Do you think that would be bad for their populations? Yeah, because if you don't have any babies, you're not going to get any grown-ups later, are you? No. So that's one thing that happened to them. Another thing is habitat destruction. And I know if you guys were joining yesterday, I mentioned a little bit about habitat destruction. Do you guys know what that means, habitat destruction? Lauren?
The habitat's being destroyed.
Yeah, the area that they live in, where they're going to be living, where they're looking for their food, where they're going to have their babies is being destroyed. Most often what happens is people love to live in the same areas where these turtles love to live. I know that we live here at the beach because we enjoy living by the coast and down in the area. It's a very beautiful place. If we start to destroy a lot of the areas that are there for the animals, then that can cause some really bad problems for them. These guys also have another problem that I think Amy may have touched on just a little bit earlier. Do you guys remember when they pulled up that crab pot that was out there? Guess what these guys like to eat?
Crabs.
They might eat crabs. They might eat little fish. They might eat little snails and stuff. And the bait that you would put in a crab pot to attract crabs in there would definitely attract a little terrapin. Now, these terrapins require something different than a crab would require. What do you think these guys need to live? How do they breathe? Lauren?
They have lungs, so they breathe air.
They have lungs just like we do, so they have to breathe air just like we do. Now, crabs, on the other hand, they have gills, so they can stay under the water, and it's okay for them. What happens with these little turtles is if they get stuck in those crab traps and they can't come to the surface, then they could drown underwater. They get trapped down underneath there. So that's a new big problem that's going on right now with these little guys. They are coming up with something that's called a turtle excluder device that can be installed into these guys, into the crab traps, so that these little turtles can find their way out, but the crabs stay inside so everybody can have crab to eat later. So it's a pretty neat thing that they're doing. Now, before I bring out the turtle, I do want to talk about turtles in general. A lot of times people don't realize what turtle shells are made of. This right here is a shell from a little box turtle. You can see very big round shell compared to this little guy. It has a flat shell since he lives in the water. You guys feel that and see if you can guess what this shell is made of. Anybody have any guesses? I think Katie has a guess.
Our ribs.
They're made of bone. She kind of knew a little bit what was going on there. If you could take a look in there, guys. See that? Let me show the camera. If you take a look on the inside of a turtle shell, you'll actually see the bones on the inside. You'll see their backbone right down the middle, and you'll see their rib cage right on the sides. Believe it or not, those are just modified ribs that are kind of fused together. So let me ask you guys this. Knowing that a turtle shell is its backbone and its rib cage, can a turtle come out of a shell?
No,
only on cartoons. I've seen it happen on cartoons. They do live in that same shell their whole entire life, and it grows with the turtle as the turtle grows. Now, if you give me just a second, I'm going to go grab our little diamondback terrapin, and we'll take a look at him up close.
Thank you.
Well, while we're waiting, we still encourage everybody to submit questions. We're getting a lot of good questions, and we really appreciate it. And one of the questions we got from Center Point Middle School is, Jennifer, how old can a turtle get?
Okay, that's a great question. That varies a whole lot depending on the type of turtle. Terrapins like this one right here can get to be about 40 to 50 years old. Some sea turtles, to give you an example of a range on these guys, they think they can live to be up to about 100 and possibly more. So turtles are have very long lives, and like I said before, it does take them a long time to reach maturity, which can be really tough for them.
And how big can turtles get?
That's a great question too. This guy right here, diamondback terrapins, usually only get to be about 5 inches long, and that's from the top of their shell right here to the back of their shell right here. The biggest turtle that you find here in North Carolina and the biggest turtle in the whole entire world happens to be a sea turtle, and that's called a leatherback sea turtle. On average, leatherback sea turtles can get to be about 7 or 8 feet long. They have been recorded up to about 9 feet long. Give you an idea, that's about as big as the deep end of a swimming pool, and they can weigh up to about 2,000 pounds, so very large animal. Now, this right here, guys, is the little diamondback terrapin. If you take a look at its feet, what do you notice? Andrew?
It has webbed feet.
It does have webbed feet. This turtle right here probably has the absolute best example of webbed feet of any turtle I could imagine bringing in. Why do you think he has webbed feet? Lauren?
Because he swims in the water.
He sure does. He spends a whole lot of his time in the water. If you're a little diamondback terrapin, I know Amy has been out on the site out here before, and she said the only time she's ever seen little terrapins is when she sees little heads sticking up all over the place. They spend the majority of their life in the water. They do, however, come on land. You can see they've got little claws on their feet, too, that are very sharp, kind of like cat claws. So that helps them to climb around whenever they're up on the land. Hi, Amy.
Hey.
Is there a difference between turtles and terrapins?
That's an excellent question. Turtle is a general term that's used to describe all turtles. If you hear the word terrapin, that actually describes a turtle that lives in the water but does come on land. And if you hear the word tortoise, that typically describes a turtle that would spend most of its time on dry land. So their legs are very different.
We have a question about what is the biggest land turtle, so maybe a tortoise.
Yes.
I have one in mind. But
the largest turtle would be one of those large tortoises that you see, like the Galapagos tortoise or the Aldabra tortoise. They're about the same size turtle, but they live in different parts of the world. So, did you guys have any questions about this little turtle here? You guys want to see him up close?
Do you have a question?
Yes, Katie.
Why is he black and white?
Why is he black and white? To help him to be camouflaged. You imagine if he were out there swimming in the water, being dark like that would help him to be camouflaged. And he does have a tiny bit, he's a little bit dry right now, it's hard to see, of counter shading where he would be darker on top and really light on bottom. But it's hard to see now. Yes, Lauren?
Does he have teeth?
Oh, that's a great question. Lauren asked me, does he have teeth? You guys take a look. Do you see any teeth right there?
No.
You see any teeth? He doesn't have teeth. No turtles have teeth. Instead, they have a beak, and it's kind of like a bird's beak, if you think of like a parrot or something. It is very strong and very powerful. Remember I said this guy would eat crabs, might even eat some snails that are found out there. So he has to have very strong, powerful beak, very strong jaws to crush into those things. So great question. No turtles have teeth, but instead they've got that beak.
We have one question here. It says, why do turtles move so slowly?
Well, not all turtles move slowly. If this little guy were in the water, he could swim away pretty quickly. Now, land turtles do move very slowly, but land turtles, they have very different shape to their body. You can see how this one's nice and big and domed. Basically, this is from a box turtle, and what they could do is if there's danger around, they can pull their head and legs inside their body, and a box turtle can actually close it off because they have a hinge on the bottom part of their shell. Now, turtles that live in the water, they don't have that ability. They can pull their head inside their shell a little bit, and they can pull their legs inside a little bit, but not all the way. So instead, they can move faster through the water by having that flatter shell. That's a great question.
Now, somebody did ask, Jennifer, how many eggs do these turtles lay?
That varies a whole lot, too. With these guys, it's going to be about 20 or so eggs on average. With sea turtles, they could have as many as 120 on average. So it does vary a whole lot depending on the species as to how many eggs they lay.
Katie's got a question.
How many eggs do they lay a year?
How many eggs do they lay a year? Well, they do lay more than one nest in a year. A lot of times they will lay three or four, sometimes even up to about seven nests in a year. But they'll do that in the warmer months because, remember, they are reptiles. And if it gets too cold, do you think that they would survive that well?
No,
probably not. Now, with some turtles, if the babies do hatch later in the year, some turtles will stay in the mud underneath the ground a little bit until it gets warmer in the spring. They'll actually stay underneath the ground through the winter if it's late in the year when they hatch, just so that they can survive in the spring because there's not a lot of food and stuff in the winter months.
We have a couple more questions, and maybe you can address these two together. Is what causes coloration of turtles, and how can you tell their age? I know that you'd be looking at them.
Those are some good questions. First of all, the color of the turtle varies a whole lot depending on its habitat. Usually they'll have camouflage to help them to blend in wherever they live. If you've got a box turtle, they've got lots of browns and stuff, so they can blend into lots of leaves and things that might be on the ground, dirt and stuff like that. Sea turtles, very different. Water turtles, because they're going to want to blend into whatever the water is that's around them. Sea turtles are actually countershaded extraordinarily well, with almost white on the bottom and really dark on top, so that they can blend into the sunlight coming down into the water. If something below is looking for food, if they're down low, then they'll blend into the darkness of the water if something above might be looking for food.
Yeah, if you're ever out swimming and you've gone down and you look back up at the surface of the water, everything's kind of washed out and white.
It looks white.
And
exactly.
As we stand up here and look down, everything's dark.
Right, so. Exactly. And that's kind of the concept there. If you've ever done that with goggles on, look up, it's going to look very white. And that's kind of how they end up with that counter shading. Now, as far as the age of the turtles, it can be kind of tricky to tell. Basically, they say that if you count the rings around the scutes or the scales on them, kind of like how you count the rings on a tree, that you can get a good idea. The problem with that is sometimes they grow so close together, it's almost impossible to tell. But that does give you an idea of roughly how old they are.
They also get worn down, and it's hard to see.
Absolutely. Especially for ones that are living on land. Imagine them dragging their bodies across on the on dirt and sand and stuff. That would definitely wear it down and make it really difficult to see that.
Andrew's got a question down here. Andrew, okay. What was your question?
What does the turtle... What eats the turtle?
What eats the turtle? That's a good question. Well, one thing that might eat this guy is something that we're going to talk about in a minute. Our alligators here. When they're little, though, they've got lots and lots of predators that are out there. When turtles are little, remember their shell is made of bone. And just like human babies have really soft bones when they're little, turtle babies have soft bone too. So that means that shell is very soft. So it makes it easy for lots of things like birds, even raccoons and stuff, to come and eat those little turtles. So when they're very small, there's lots of predators out there. As they get older, not as many predators, just because that shell is really hard, and that'll help to protect them.
All right. Some other questions we had coming in. What is the best turtle to keep as a pet? I guess that's probably a good way to talk about keeping these kinds of animals as a pet.
Right, right. A lot of people do have turtles as pets. I think that the best pets, and I'll get on my soapbox for a minute, are probably cats and dogs. Reptiles in general aren't very warm, cuddly animals, so it can be very difficult. Reptiles do have very special needs, though. Reptiles, remember, since they are ectothermic or cold-blooded, their body temperature depends on their surroundings. So you have to make sure that they have proper lighting, that they have proper heat, that you know exactly what they eat. And keep in mind that they have very long lifespan. So that's something to keep in mind whenever you are looking at having a turtle as a pet. I have friends who have box turtles as pets. Just to give you an idea, they can live to be up to about 50 years old. So make sure that you can take care of that pet for the duration of its life, or make sure you know someone else who can. Also, some of them get much larger than people think. Some of these little sliders that people get for pets, they start off about the size of a quarter. And when they're fully grown, their shells can be about that long or so. So they do require a lot of space and a lot of care. But turtles can make good pets as long as you do all of your research on that to find out exactly that you can meet all of their needs that they have.
We did have a question come in. What do terrapins eat? I'm going to ask the students here, what do you think do terrapins eat? Has Jennifer given you some hints as to what you think it might eat?
Crabs and shrimp.
Crabs and shrimp. Let's see. Katie, what do you think?
Clams and oysters.
Okay. Mary Hannah, do you have a different idea of what they might eat?
Sea worms or something.
Okay. Lauren, what do you think?
Little fish.
Okay, Jennifer, tell us who's right. What do terrapins eat?
All of them are right. I had mentioned before, terrapins do eat a wide variety of things. They have that very strong beak, so they can eat lots of crabs. These guys happen to love shrimp. That's one of their favorite treats at the aquarium. Sometimes we'll give them squid and soft-bodied stuff like that. They will eat some fish if we give it to them. But it seems the hard, crunchy stuff seems to be some of their favorites.
And Jennifer, you just, after you put your turtle up, you went over and got a disinfectant, I guess, for your hands.
I sure did.
And I think they're probably going to be doing it as well. Can you tell us why you did that?
Yes, really good reason that I do that. I always wash my hands after handling any reptiles. All reptiles can carry salmonella in their digestive tract. For those of you out there, you probably heard of salmonella with chicken and stuff like that. It can cause people to get really sick and may not necessarily get it from holding these guys, but it's always better to be safe than sorry. So if you ever go out in your yard and pick up a turtle and stuff and look at it, put it back, make sure you go inside and wash your hands afterwards just to get rid of any of those germs that might be on there.
You just mentioned outside picking a turtle up. A lot of times people see turtles beside a road or crossing your yard, and they may bring them inside or want to relocate them and help them. I've seen people take box turtles and take them down to the pond.
Right.
What should people do if they find a turtle?
Best thing to do is if you see a turtle, I would leave it where it is. It knows where it's going, and it knows why it's heading that way. If you happen to see one crossing the road and you want to help it cross the road, just take it to that same the side of the road than the direction that it's heading. Because if you take it to the other side, chances are really good it's going to turn right around and head back the other way, because that's the way it wanted to go to begin with. I always tell people to take extreme caution when you're doing that, though, because in this area I know there are a lot of snapping turtles that like to cross the road. I didn't bring a snapping turtle with me today. Snapping turtles are really interesting turtles. They're really neat. If you've ever seen one, they look almost like dinosaur. They've got a really long tail that looks almost like an alligator tail, and they're called snapping turtles because they're known for snapping. They've got a really, really strong, powerful bite. The interesting thing about snapping turtles and some other turtles that live in the water is they have very long neck. And a snapping turtle can basically reach its neck all the way back about 3/4 of the length of its shell. So if you were to pick it up on its side, which is normally what comes natural, what do you think would happen? Yeah, snap. Exactly. It wouldn't feel very good. So if you ever see a snapping turtle, or you think you might see a snapping turtle, please don't try to pick that up. Best thing to do is if you have maybe a broom or stick or something to kind of push it out of the way. That's how I would recommend moving those. So.
And if you're beside a road, you should also be careful for the cars.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I did want to ask, since we're kind of moving on to something else, did y'all have any questions about turtles or anything? Because I know y'all know some about reptiles, too. Did y'all have any questions?
They're being quiet.
Okay.
So you guys know what we're going to talk about next? What? Alligators. Yeah, anybody here like alligators? Yeah, alligators are pretty interesting animals. Alligators definitely do live here in North Carolina. Their range can go anywhere from about the North Carolina-Virginia border all the way down through Florida and all the way west to about Texas or so. Alligators, you don't see so many in this area as you used to because of habitat destruction again. Also, alligators get so large and they can be very frightening, so a lot of times people will move them to different areas if they find them in areas where people are living and stuff.
What, have you guys ever seen any alligators?
Out in the wild?
Yeah, have you ever seen alligators? Lauren, where have you seen one?
Florida, mostly.
Okay, so you spent some time down there, so you saw some in Florida.
I've seen them down around Wilmington. Mm-hmm. And Brunswick County.
Yeah, Brunswick County, they have quite a few that are there. I've heard people have seen them up near New Bern. So isn't that where you guys are from? Yeah, I've heard people. Yeah, I've heard people who have seen them up that way. Alligators are very secretive animals. Usually when you see them, all you'll see sticking up out of the water are their eyes right up here. You might see their nose sticking up out of the water, and their ears are right back behind their eyes. Whenever you see that, you can kind of get an idea of how big an alligator is, believe it or not. If you see it, and it's kind of hard to tell from a distance, but they say that if you try to get an idea of how many inches it is from their nose to where their eyes are, that's about how many feet long that alligator would be. Isn't that pretty interesting?
So can somebody measure that and see if you can estimate how big that alligator potentially was for this skull that we've got here on the table?
From up here to back there.
While they're measuring that, Sandy Ridge Elementary School had a question for Jennifer.
I think it was about 10 feet.
About 10 feet. That's pretty big, isn't it?
Okay. Wow. As I was saying, Sandy Ridge Elementary had a question. How long has Jennifer been doing her job?
And, oh, that's a good question.
You've actually been at this sort of thing for a long time.
For a long, long time. I've been here at the aquarium for about a year and a half. I used to work at the North Carolina Aquarium at Fort Fisher, which I believe they're tuning in today. I started volunteering there back in 1991, so quite a while. So I've been doing most of my work in education. I have worked at a zoo in between as well, so it's a lot of fun.
What kind of schooling did you get?
I went to school at UNC Wilmington, and I got my degree in marine biology. So, great. And I love my job. It's awesome. So not too many jobs where you get to play with all these cool animals. So.
And even, Jennifer, I don't know if you mentioned it, wanted to make people that are local in North Carolina aware that even though the aquarium's closed doesn't mean you're not open for business.
Oh, no.
Y'all are still doing plenty of stuff.
Still doing a lot of outreach stuff. So it's a lot of interesting things going on at the aquarium right now.
Yep.
I also did, for anyone who might be interested in marine biology and stuff, I did an internship at SeaWorld as well. So there's lots and lots of things that are out there that you can do. And I recommend at early ages, take up any opportunities you get, like these guys. I know this is awesome that they get to come out here today and do this. So.
Yeah, I think Lauren wants to find somewhere to go study reptiles.
Yeah, marine biology is more than just studying some of the cute animals.
Oh,
I mean,
absolutely.
Earlier we looked at fouling compound animals.
And you don't think they're cute?
I think they're interesting, but I mean, a lot of people don't. And
right.
Here you're working with some people don't like snakes.
Right,
and
exactly.
That is still marine biology.
Still kind of falls underneath the whole umbrella of all of it, because these guys still are definitely tied into those aquatic systems. So, but let's see.
We will get back to the 10-foot alligator.
Yeah. So if you guys take a look right here, most things when people think about alligators, what do you think of? What's the first thing you think of with an alligator?
Scary.
Teeth. Exactly. Usually people think about those teeth. Now, this one isn't a good example. He doesn't need his teeth anymore, so a lot of them are missing. An alligator can have up to about 80 sharp teeth in his mouth at one time, about 40 on top and 40 on bottom. As they grow, they lose teeth because they're eating things. Like I said, they might be able to crunch down into a turtle. They might find a bird to eat or something. Whenever they grab onto that, a lot of times they'll lose teeth. Can you guys think of another animal that loses teeth throughout its life?
Shark.
Yeah, sharks. Now, when sharks lose their teeth, what they do is theirs are kind of like in a conveyor belt. They've got kind of teeth stacked up behind that tooth, and they lose one, and the next one moves forward. Alligators, when they lose their teeth, it's very different. What they'll do, if you can hand that to me and hand those to me. What they do, it's kind of like I use these little stack of cups to explain it. Their teeth, let's pretend this is a tooth. It's a very flat tooth, but let's pretend. What they'll do is if they're biting into something really hard and they lose a tooth, there's another one. It's hollow on the inside, and there's another one just underneath waiting to push up. When they lose this one, the same thing's going to happen, and it'll push up again. So they'll continue replacing those teeth throughout their life. They estimate that alligators can go through about 2,000 teeth in a lifetime. So that's pretty amazing. I've got some actual alligator teeth right here. If you guys want to take a look at them, you can see they are hollow inside, and that's where that next tooth that would be pushing into place would move right up through there. Now, alligators, when I bring out the live one, you guys will see they're very well adapted for living in the water. As I mentioned before, their nostrils, their nose is going to be sticking straight up and a little bit raised so that when they're swimming along, they can still be breathing. Their eyes are up top so they can look for food or look for danger. Their ears are right behind those eyes so they can listen for any danger and listen for maybe something that might could be food items for them. These guys are carnivores as well, like the snakes were earlier. And alligators, what do you guys think alligators eat?
Crabs and big fish.
Turtles.
What do you think?
Pretty much anything that's meat and can fit inside their mouth.
There you go. That's pretty much true. Anything that they could get, they'll clamp onto. Sometimes they'll take their prey and drag it down under the water until it drowns, and then they'll come back up onto the surface and eat that. But they can eat numbers of things. They can eat fish, like you said, turtles. They might eat crabs and stuff, sure. Just about anything that's around that they could get, they're going to try to eat. So,
wanted to ask, since the students, Mary Hannah and Lauren and Andrew and Katie, had looked at the teeth, what are they like? Are they kind of like ours?
No, they're a lot longer
and sharper. And sharper.
Okay, longer and sharper. But do they feel kind of like ours, though?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so just kind of give folks an idea, because I'm sure people don't feel alligator teeth
very
often.
No, and I recommend that you don't try to do that. So.
We did have a question. First of all, why don't you find alligators in Alligator River, which is north of us a little bit, in Hyde County and Terrell County, right in that area? I think chances are good there may be some there, you're just not seeing.
I think you're probably right. There's probably a really good chance that there are some there. Like I said, alligators are very secretive. No one has asked me yet, what's the difference between an alligator and a crocodile? Can you guys tell me some of the differences between alligator and crocodile? Do you guys know some?
Ooh.
A crocodile has a more pointed snout, and an alligator has a more rounded snout, like a U.
That's right. Very good. So alligators tend to have very wide, rounded snout. Like, yep, there you go. You can see how that's really wide and rounded. Whereas if I had a crocodile skull right here, it would taper very quickly and look really pointed. Does anyone know another difference between alligator and a crocodile?
The crocodile's fourth tooth on the bottom sticks up.
That's exactly right. What she's talking about, a crocodile, on the bottom, the lower part of its jaw, actually the fourth tooth on the bottom on either side is going to stick straight up. Their skull actually would have a groove right here, like a little cutout, where that tooth could stick right up on each side. So if you ever see on TV a crocodile walking around, you're always going to see those two teeth sticking out. But chances are you're going to see bottom teeth sticking out all over the place, top teeth sticking out, and they're going to look very snaggletooth. Whereas an alligator, usually you're just going to see those top teeth sticking down. On occasion, you might see some of the others if they've had some really rough stuff happen to their mouths. But
We did have a question. Can alligators be pets? And I think it's probably important to address that.
Yes, that's a great question. Alligators are illegal to have as pets. Alligators are protected by law. They're considered to be a threatened species. They used to be endangered species because people would hunt them. Why do you think people would hunt alligators? Do you guys know?
Because they were afraid that they would kill them. I mean,
they might be scared of them and kill them. Can you think of other reasons why they might hunt them?
Maybe because their skin.
For their skin and for leather. That's right. What about for their meat? Do you think people would like to eat alligators? Yeah. Anybody here ever tried alligator? No? I see some hands over there. A lot of people have tried alligator. A lot of people eat alligator. Alligator meat, I've heard, tastes like chicken, so I keep eating chicken.
And they most of the ones that you eat are raised on farms.
They are. That's what I was going to get to. What happened was, before, people would hunt these alligators for their skin, for their leather, for the meat, and they would just keep going out and hunting them. What happened was, over time, they noticed, hey, there's not so many alligators anymore, and they started looking into it, and they realized they needed to pass some laws to protect them. So they made it illegal for people to hunt alligators. Over time, the alligator population bounced back. They've now been upgraded to threatened. It is in some areas, not here, but in some areas, people can hunt them with proper license, but most often what happens is they have alligator farms where they raise alligators for the sole purpose of using their meat and using their skin for leather and stuff. So that way it doesn't hurt the wild population, and the wild population is still continuing to do well out there. So pretty important thing, I think, that kind of shows to prove that goes to prove whenever we do pass laws to help to right some of the wrongs that we've done with animals, that it can make a difference. This is a great example. These guys have bounced back from being endangered. So,
Lauren, what's your question?
Well, at one point there was an alligator in a pet shop near New Bern that was for sale.
That's a good question. It probably wasn't an alligator. There is an animal that's in the same family as crocodiles and alligators called a caiman. That is legal for some people to have as pets. Now, once again, not a very good choice for a pet. They can get to be quite large, and they can be quite aggressive. I think that those guys can get to be 6 to 8 feet long, and you really don't want to have a pet like that running around your house. And any crocodilian that size could definitely eat a small dog or something, so you wouldn't want that in your neighborhoods.
That's bigger than your bathtub.
Yes, yeah. So you couldn't keep it in your bathtub.
Yeah, I had a couple questions. Katie?
How big is the longest alligator?
That's a good question. I don't know if we'll have room to do it here since the camera's stationary, but I brought a measuring tape. The alligators, on average, the female alligator gets to be about 8 feet long. I think this is a 6 foot table, isn't it?
Right there.
There we go. Hold on. So on average, right up here at about 8 feet is where you're going to see some females, but you can see them all the way up to about 9 feet. This is a female alligator. Now watch this. Can you back up a little bit, Katie? And stop. Average male alligator, about 12 feet long. That's pretty big, huh?
Yeah.
Now watch this. Used to be in North Carolina, the biggest was 12 feet 7 inches, but now, a few months back, they found one that was up to 13 feet long, the biggest one in North Carolina. So they do get quite large.
Lauren has How big was Super Croc in Australia?
The Super Croc that she's talking about, those are endangered. There are no more, extinct. Those, they think, got to be up to about 60 feet long. This measuring tape doesn't go that big. Imagine about three school buses lined up, so I would not want to run into that guy.
They're pretty
prehistoric.
Prehistoric.
Yeah. So we'll go ahead and roll that back up. Now, just to let you guys know, you saw how big those alligators get. Crocodiles get even bigger than that. So in the United States, the only place you'd find a crocodile would be in southern Florida. And there you'll find the American crocodile. And those do get to be quite large. They'll get bigger than what we said here, about 20 feet or so. So let me go ahead, and I'm going to bring out our little baby alligator. These guys have already been warned a little bit. Even though he's little, he's still an alligator. He's probably going to kind of thrash around a little bit at first, and you might even hear him hissing a little bit. But don't worry, nobody's going to be in any danger, I promise. So let me go get him out.
And while she's getting that out, what should you do if attacked by an alligator? And I think we'll wait till Jennifer gets back. With the alligator.
Let me cut his mouth, please.
All right. He'll probably be hissing quite a bit here, so.
So, Jennifer, did you hear the question? What should you do if you're attacked by an alligator?
What should you do? Well, if you're attacked by an alligator, it's hard to say what you should do. I can tell you some things that you can do to avoid being attacked by an alligator. to avoid being attacked by an alligator, one thing you can do, if you're walking in an area where you know there are alligators, alligators kind of size up their prey by height. So what do you think you could do if you're walking in an area to make you look taller? What could you guys do?
You can.
I can't hear you.
To your mouth.
You can hold your arms up and make yourself look taller.
Exactly. If you walk in areas where there might be alligators, if you stick your hands up above your head straight up, it's going to make you look a whole lot taller, and so the alligator is going to be less likely to come near you. Usually, if attacks on people with alligators that you hear, usually very small children, just because they don't look like anything really big, so alligators might go for them. For the most part, you're not going to hear of many alligator attacks unless people have been maybe in some of the ponds and lakes down in Florida. You might hear about that, just because they're pretty secretive animals and they're going to stay away. Now, as far as them being aggressive, they're typically not, but whenever mom has eggs or babies around, she will protect them. A mom alligator builds a big nest and she'll lay her eggs in that nest. There can be anywhere from 20 to 50 eggs in a nest. About 65 days later, those little eggs will hatch. And mom believe it or not, she'll actually help those little babies down to the pond, and then she'll protect them for the first year or two of their lives until they get bigger, and then they go off on their own. So if you happen to be in an area where there might be a mom alligator, that can be very dangerous. So you want to kind of be aware of what's out there. Keep your eyes open, even though they're hard to see. And stay out of any lakes and ponds and areas where you know there are alligators, because, you know, if you come up on one and it's startled and it feels scared, it definitely could try to protect itself. So that would be my advice as far as that goes.
I know, talking about some of the ponds, one of the problems people have had is they've been feeding alligators.
Yes.
And they get used to having people come out there and throw them chickens a lot of times.
Yeah.
And then they walk their poodle down beside the water.
And that's a good point. That's a really good point. A lot of people, when they see a little alligator this size, they might think, oh, he doesn't look too scary. And they might think, you know, oh, I'll go take him some chicken. Poor little guy. He needs something to eat. When alligators first hatch out of their eggs, just to give you an idea, they're about 8 inches long. They're not very big. For the first several years of their life, they can grow anywhere from 6 inches to a foot. So you can see very quickly, over just a couple years, that alligator's going to get really big. So if you fed an alligator this size, a year later, he's going to be a foot longer than this, let's say. Do you think that can start to get scary? What about 2 years later, when he's about 2 feet longer? Pretty soon, you've got an alligator that's not scared of people. He thinks people are going to feed them, so he's going to come around where people are looking for food, and it can cause a really bad problem for both the alligator and for people, and certainly if they have small pets. So.
Daniel's middle school wants to know, are you choking the gator?
That's a good question. No, I'm not. Actually, the only pressure I have on the alligator right now is on the bottom and the top, and that's just so he doesn't open his mouth. With so many people by, I don't want anyone to get bit. If I move my hand back, you can see he'll open his mouth, and he'll wiggle around. And he's got lots of sharp teeth. Even though he's small, he's still got a whole full mouth of teeth, and he could still certainly hurt me. So for safety purposes, I'm just holding his mouth shut. All of alligators' power is in closing their jaws. Whenever they open their mouth, they don't have a whole lot of muscles to pull their mouth open. So my two fingers are just enough to hold it shut. Whenever he closes his mouth, though, alligators have very powerful jaws when they chomp those jaws shut. When they do that, they've got about 2,000 pounds per square inch of pressure underneath there. So I'm not choking the alligator. I'm certainly not putting any pressure on his neck, because he needs that for breathing, just like we would. So I'm not choking him at all. Thanks for your concern.
You mentioned the mouth.
Yes.
Being a dangerous point, but there's also other parts of the alligator ones to watch out for.
There are. Their tail can be dangerous. It's very, very powerful. Lots of muscle there. They could actually knock a person over with that tail. Their tail, they use for the most part whenever they're going through the water. They're going to move that tail back and forth, and that's going to push them very fast through that water column. They'll use their feet. When they're moving fast, they'll usually tuck their legs right up beside them. They don't really use them a whole lot at all. They may use them kind of as rudders to steer as they're going through. If they're going really slow through the water, they may use those feet at that time. So, yes, Lauren.
Do you think he can knock over anyone with his tail?
No. He's much too small. He might like to try, though. So,
someone earlier, whenever we were looking at the alligator, noticed that whenever they were looking at his eyes, they looked kind of interesting. Alligators can blink their eyes like we can. They have upper lids and lower lids that can open and close, but they also have a special third eyelid that's called a nictitating membrane. And basically, that moves across the front of their eye and to protect themselves while they're eating, or if they feel like there's danger, that'll protect their eyes. But also when they're swimming underwater, it'll cover their eyes almost like goggles as they're swimming along to protect them. So a lot of animals have nictitating membranes. Lots of birds have those. And if you have a cat or dog at home, if you take a look at those, sometimes you can see them as well. Then we have a question over here.
I think Andrew had a question.
How can you tell if it's a male or a female?
Oh, that's a good question. Just by looking at this alligator, I can't tell if it's a boy or a girl. I have no idea. A vet or someone trained in checking out the animal could actually probe them. Basically, they've got a little hole that's called their vent, and they'd have to check on the inside of the animal to see. So I don't know if this one's a boy or a girl. I just call him a him. I don't know why.
And Jennifer, I noticed you mentioned that the alligator may learn that people feed it and get used to the type of things, but the alligator itself actually has a pretty small brain.
They do have a very small brain. A lot of reptiles have very small brains. Basically, that goes back to the fact that they don't really have to learn a whole lot in order to survive. When they first hatch, they're born with what's called instinct. Have you guys heard of instinct before? Do you know what that is? Do you know what that is, Andrew? Can you tell us?
They already know what to do.
That's right. Exactly. Instinct means that they're born with a knowledge of what to do. They already know whenever they first hatch kind of what to look for. They look for little small bugs and stuff to eat. They already know what danger to look out for so they can stay protected. And they know these things without mom really teaching them that. Mom never really shows them how to hunt. They already know that all on their own. So they don't have very large brains just because they don't have to learn a whole lot of things. When they first hatch, they're pretty much ready to go. So
we said this alligator was about 10 feet long.
Probably about 9 or so, yeah.
And if you think about a human head, or even Jennifer here, you know, her brain's up in here, takes a major part of her head. If we look at the alligator, most of his head is for the jaws and shutting that, so eating. You got to remember, eyes are here, and the brain is in this small piece right in here between my hand, between my fingers. And you can see for the size animal, I think it's a 9 foot, 10 foot animal, that he has a very small brain. So he's not going to know much more than to eat.
Right, exactly. And that goes back to the whole thing, to protect yourself. If you hold your arms up, that alligator doesn't know any difference. He doesn't know, oh, that's just a person holding their hands up. To him, that looks like a really big animal, so he's going to stay away. So that's a good point.
East Clayton Elementary wants to know where gators are mostly found.
Well, like I said, their range is from North Carolina-Virginia border all the way down south around Florida and as far west as Texas. You're going to find them, where they're found is limited to warm areas, so you wouldn't find an alligator like this, for example, in the mountains of North Carolina, so it wouldn't be that whole entire area we're talking about.
How about Southern California?
None in Southern California, except in zoos or someone's illegally released one, so... these guys are restricted, like I said, to the weather, to the temperature that's there, and for whatever reason, they've been restricted to this side of the U.S. They, as far as their nests go, usually when they'll nest, it's going to be kind of in the spring months. They'll usually hatch in August, and usually really warm, humid areas, so they build like a big mound, and I think that answered that question on that.
I really appreciate you coming out today.
Thank you so much.
And for people over there at the North Carolina Aquariums, come out and visit those when you're out here to coast. And does anybody here have any final question for Jennifer?
Yeah, I think Andrew had a question.
Which one is more aggressive, the male or the female?
Oh, that's a good question. Typically, the male can be much more aggressive, unless the mom has some babies around. If mom has babies around, she can be worse than the males. But typically speaking, just a regular male and a regular female, the male's going to be more aggressive. But if the mom has babies, she will protect them however she has to.
All right. Well, thanks so much for being on with us and bringing all this stuff.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks
I guess I'll thank you for bringing the snack, too. We do need to wrap this session up. We're going to have a boating session coming up pretty soon. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to pass the mic around if the students will introduce yourself one more time. I know we've done this a couple times today, but we've had different people on. And tell us what school you go to. So folks, so students out there will know what school you go to and have an idea of who you are.
My name is David. I go to Pilsentown Elementary School in Durham. My name is Jack. I go to Rochester Middle School in Durham.
My name is Katie, and I go to Brinson Memorial in New Bern.
I'm Andrew, and I go to Brinson Memorial in New Bern.
I'm Mary Hannah, and I go to Brinson Memorial School in New Bern.
And I'm Lauren, and I go to Brinson Memorial School in New Bern.
I'm Jennifer Hoskins, and I work at the North Carolina Aquarium at Pine Knoll Shores.
Bill Kroll, the Albemarle Pamlico National Estuary Program in Raleigh, North Carolina.
All right, stay tuned with us. We'll be back on at 11:30 to talk about boating. Bye. Everybody wave.